Top 100 Clubhouse podcast is brought to you by Eden Mill. Bring the tradition of distilling whiskey and gin back to St. Andrews, the home of golf.
Matt Adamski, Sweetens Cove, general manager, kind of the director of nonsense, if you will, I think, at Sweetens Cove is what it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Top 100 Clubhouse, the ultimate podcast for golf course enthusiasts worldwide. I'm your host, James Henderson, and we're about to embark on a journey through lush fairways and breathtaking landscapes, as well as delving deep into the minds of fascinating individuals from every corner of the golfing universe. Get ready to explore the world's top golf courses through the eyes of those who know them best. I think we'll just start off by getting straight into it, by asking you the classic question of how did the golf bug bite you?
Yeah, so the golf bug bit me, I think, when I was 14. I played all the normal sports, you know, basketball, football. It was not a very good, our version of football, and it was not a very good football player. And I think I was diving for a pass and fell on a rock. That's how bad I was. And broke my growth plate in my knee. Yeah, it's a real life story. And so that escalated, and I ended up having three hip surgeries. So my mom said, you know what? You should play golf. I'm like, golf? I don't want to play golf. Nobody plays golf. And she's like, yeah, you should play golf. I've talked to the golf coach. You're going to do something, or you're not playing football anymore. Apparently that's not working out. So, but you'll play golf. That's what you'll do. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So, I had a setup where I was going to go and try out. And we had this golf course next to my house, and they have an 18-hole facility. At no driving range, but they have a 9-hole executive course. So a bunch of par threes, couple par fours, right? And so I went there and played with a couple of the upperclassmen, and it was like par 28 or something like that. And I think I shot like 62 or something like that. It was just god awful. I was super embarrassed. It was terrible. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And I just I did it. And I've hit golf balls in my backyard. My mom and dad had a bunch of land, and we grew up kind of in the sticks, a bunch of farmland and stuff. And I went out there, and I just kind of would hit golf balls every single day, to the point where I just kind of fell in love with it. And it just it kind of became me, and I made the freshman team. And by the end of it, I ended up playing in a varsity match by my freshman year. So it kind of just I did it so much, it just kind of caught fire and really enjoyed it. And then would play all summer, and that was kind of it from there. And it was kind of finding my direction in golf. And I had a substitute teacher. My mom was a teacher in the high school, and she had a substitute teacher that goes, what are you going to do for college? I'm like, I have no idea. And he goes, you like golf, right? I'm like, yeah, I do. He's like, you should be a golf pro. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. How do I do that? And he's like, yeah, I went to Ferris State and did the PGM program. He's like, you should look into that. So I did. And that's where I got my direction in the golf industry. I had no idea. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be a golf pro. This is a professional golfer. That'd be cool. And so I went to Ferris State through the PGM program, and just kind of fell in love with what I do on a daily basis. So golf, just in high school and everything, was an okay golfer. And really just got a passion for the sport and the industry. And that's what I do.
There's it's quite an interesting one, because obviously there's no golf pro at Sweetens Cove,
right?
So yeah, you've ended up in a space where there is don't employ that kind of person that you went off to try, right, and be. Where did you work in between Sweetens and where you?
So I've been a PGA professional since 2007. and do a number of internships through college and school, and was at Bethesda Country Club in Maryland, right down from Congressional, and Barton Creek in Austin, Texas, and the Cliffs communities, and a place actually ironically called Whiskey Creek in Imesville, Maryland. Those were where I kind of started. And I think my first real job was was the Cliffs communities. And then I went from there to go up north. I was at a place for a little bit called Seven Falls Golf and River Club, where I was head golf professional there, and then went up north to northern Michigan, and was at a place called Birchwood Farms Golf and Country Club, and went to Detroit Golf Club, where they host the Rocky Mortgage Classic. And then my last stint before coming here, I was the head golf professional at NCR Country Club in Dayton, Ohio. So hosted 36-hole Dick Wilson design, hosted 6 major championships. So it's just a lot of private stuff. Yeah, like all private in that category. And this was the first public facility that I've ever worked at, really, besides my first internship.
That makes up not many states you haven't worked in.
It's good. It's quite a bit. So it's Maryland, Pennsylvania, Richmond, Virginia, Michigan, Texas, Ohio, and now Tennessee.
That's ridiculous. That's a lot of states to have worked in.
Right.
And just so people who don't see the camera and just hear that he's not an old man. You're very youthful.
That's right. So,
very impressive.
It's fun. I think, I mean, you as a golf professional in this industry, you're generally a nomad. You either find your spot real quick, or you're kind of ever evolving to go to the next place. Because I always think that there is a timeline on it, and I don't think your resume is as good as the amount of years as you've been somewhere. And if you've helped bring that place up to a capacity of where you're getting the most out of it, and they're getting the most out of you, I think the next step is to go to somewhere else and learn from somebody else, because I feel like the more people that you can interact with in your profession, the better you become. And I've learned so much. I've worked for some really, really good golf professionals that were all tops in their craft, in their industry, multi presidents of sections, and national representatives for the PGA of America, and just a top merchandiser of the years, and golf professionals of the years, and you know, all the accolades that come with those folks. And I've you take the pieces of the puzzle, and I think all those pieces got me to Sweetens, and I have a different perspective in golf for that, to help me, I think, do what I've done here, which doesn't seem like that would be the path to come to a shed. I think quote my general manager when I was taking this job, that time when I was working at NCR, Jeff Grant, and he's the best in the biz too. And he said, you're committing a career suicide because you're going to go from this place, which is fantastic. And he's like, I don't know if this is your path. You're better than this. He's like, you're going to go to a 9-hole golf course with a shed. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's what we're going to do.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But then that gave you the creativity and the spark to be able to do something different, right?
I guess I call myself the black sheep of the PGA, because I always try to incite fun and do different things that weren't necessarily PC in the private world, because that's the way we've done it. And this is how it's done. And I think I've been able to use all that creativity that I've had pent up throughout my career, that I've dabbled with in spots and really done some really good things with, and built good programs and such. And then I was able to utilize all that and actually execute them here. This gave you that spotlight.
Yeah, it gave you the opportunity. So when you turned up and you spoke to Rob and Tad, How did you approach it? Did you go, I'm the black sheep, I'm going to do something different here, and we're going to have some fun? Or did you turn up being like, okay, I'm going to be a GM and I'm going to do the right job, I'm going to do it properly?
Yeah. It's interesting. I just met with Rob. Came in, and I was, I'll tell you the interview. This is a classic story, actually. The old GM was here, Nash, and he's like, yeah, we'll get you an interview with Rob. And if this is what you want to do, you'd be a good fit for the next person. I go, oh, cool. Awesome. It's like, so come on, we'll come to Chattanooga, stay the night, take over the golf course. The next day we have the interview. I'm like, oh, awesome. So I come out of the bathroom and I'm in my suit and tie, and he goes, oh, hey, wait, well, you don't need to wear that here. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, this is how I interview. It's like, this is how I've always done all my interviews. I didn't like you wear a suit and tie. He goes, no, just put like a polo on and shorts. I'm like, but I don't own a pair of shorts. I said, besides like swim trunks, I'm like, I don't wear them in my industry, you know, especially at the places that I go. And that I've been a part of. I said, I've got a plethora of pants. And that's about it. So then I came out with a pair of pants and a button down. He goes, nope, not going to work. And he said, put a polo on, untuck it, and get some shorts. I'm like, I told you I don't have shorts. So I wore a pair of his shorts. wore a pair of his shorts. He says, let me tell you how this interview is going to go. Mr. Collins will show up. He'll come in on two wheels in his Audi, jump out, and he'll be in a red t-shirt of some sort, board shorts, black Puma shoes, and probably be wearing a hat. I'm like, okay. So like anything else that you would wear, it's uncomfortable. You don't need to do that. It's not, it'll be the most different interview you've ever had. And, show up. And he gets out of the car, he flies in here. He's like, oh, sorry, a couple minutes late. I was just trying to get here, whatever. And I go, hey, Mr. Collins, Matt Adamski, pleasure to meet you. Here's my resume. And Rob folded it up and just put it in his back pockets. All right, thank you. And I was like, oh, I guess we're not going to do this. He's like, all right, so let's, let's go check out the golf course, jump on the cart. And he's like, this is what I want. I want you to be like be kind of like ambassador of golf here. Make sure everybody's having a good time. You know, say hi to people, like shake hands, like make sure they're having fun, and just try to elevate the experience. He's like, that's what I want. I want somebody that's going to come in here and care about people and. That's pretty much it. We were actually driving around the golf course and saying hi and just checking out where people were coming from. And we get to this, we get to hole seven, where I met you and Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched a lot of putts happen between the two of you, I think.
You watched a lot of putts from me. I played a bit of ping pong on that green.
That's right. We get to there and we say hello to this group, and one of the kids had just had a hole in one the previous loop before. They had a hole in one on number nine, and so we say congratulations and where are you from and etc. And then Rob's like, all right, boys, so great to see you, thanks for coming out. And he jumps in the cart that we had and just drives away. And these guys go, is this like an interview? I was like, yeah, it's an interview. I said, it's probably not a good thing that he just drove away without me, right? And he did, and it was hilarious. And we had a nice conversation. We talked about stuff. We're always trying to do the right thing out here and change, but always be different. And we're very unapologetic for the way we do things, I think would be the best way to suggest it, because it's not everybody's cup of tea. And sometimes you got to break these people, our golfers and our folks, down a little bit from the normal hospitality version of golf so that they can enjoy this place better. So it's not, this is never going to be that place where it's, say, Mr. Smith or, let me grab your bag for you. Let me get you in a cart, walk your clubs to the car and put them in there for you. That's not this place. You're very self-sufficient and sometimes we kind of break you down and everybody's jonesing at the bit to get in the shed or or figure out what the hell is going on for the day, because there's nobody in there at first. And then we collect everybody at a certain time. So it's just the very opposite of what your normal golf experience would be somewhere. And it helps, I think, people loosen up, and that pretentiousness that is golf is not found with us here whatsoever. So they can go out and enjoy themselves with their six-some or their 10-some or the just the folks that they brought. So
can you give us a wee run through of what a day at Sweetens is like?
Yeah. So we do our pass release. We call them passes. We don't have there's no such thing as tee times here. It's not necessarily a free for all, but basically we do a shotgun start every single day. And you get your passes way far in advance generally. We do a pass release now once a year. We did them seasonally based before, but we do 60 passes per day, passes equal people, on Monday through Thursday, and then 45 passes on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So only 45 people out here. And we do an all-day pass experience on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but a 18-hole, 9-hole, or all-day pass on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. So they have that opportunity to pay and play for what they would want to play. But 90% of our play on a yearly basis is all day. 9%, 9.5%, honestly, is 18 holes. And like under 1% of people play 9 holes at this 9-hole golf course.
Why go there for just 9 holes?
Yeah, if you have a time constraint, I get it. But time stands still here at Sweetens Cove, and we want you to enjoy yourself in the day. And if you've already sectioned off 4 days, half your day's gone anyway, and you generally have another hour or two in drive time to some places, right? So, like, you've basically had an all day written off anyway, so might as well play more golf.
You're also just not experiencing the full understanding of what Sweetens Cove is, right?
Right. Yeah, and you may not know at first, but we do these pass releases. And they go very quick. This last pass release was like under 5 minutes for the entirety of the year.
Which is crazy. Does your computer system break down?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you're talking about, more people than quantities available. So it's a mad rush to try to get some of these passes and try to get your date that you're looking for. And you really have to be flexible on the time frame of the date. So you might not get your first choice. And if you get some passes, that's better than getting no passes at Sweetens. But once you secured one of those passes for your date, a specific date, then you show up. We send out an email the day before around 1:30 central time-ish. And it says what to bring, what we're going to have available, like what the expectation is, like show up at 8:30. And we'll collect everybody in the 8:45 range, and then we'll go play golf. So we'll have people show up, get antsy, and they'll show up. They won't realize it's central time, and we're right on the border of central and eastern time, in the time zone right there, 7 miles to be exact. And so a lot of people are confused by that, and they'll show up early and they want to go to the range. Well, we don't have a driving range. They're just kind of confused because I don't really do any sales before the morning. So you can't go in the shop, be in the shed here, and you just kind of walk around and maybe do a little putting on the honey barrel.
Which is very cool.
It's unreal, right?
Yeah, you opened up for us. You let us turn the lights on at night. It was superb.
Yeah, it's just fun. That's a different aspect too. That just is a kind of neat thing. You guys have the place to yourself at that point.
Yeah, I'm not. Colin's going to hate me, but he had a 17.
17 putt.
Yeah, 17 putt. Colin's going to hate me, but
yeah, that's awesome. But so we collect everybody. I basically say, hey, fellas or ladies, if we got any ladies, come on up here, and I collect everybody around our shed, and then I just kind of go over the details for the day, how it'll work, that, we allow large groups to play with each other and how to pass them if you feel like they're playing too slow. And that way you can have the most enjoyment for your day and really kind of just lay down the rules, which there aren't very many, but just so that everybody can enjoy themselves the most. So, you know, and then when I start checking people in, we assign you a hole and you go out to that hole and you start playing golf because it's a giant circle. We've only got 9 holes. But technically we have 18 holes because there's 2 flags in each green. So like, you know, you can play an 18 hole loop and then you can switch it up and start doing some, alternating of flags. And, you know, we always say that the last option is whatever one you hit it close to, knock it in. Then from there, you've got some alternate routings and stuff like that, that you can play in the evening as we get to close, where you can play some cross country golf, if you will. And we've got those in a, scorecard with a map. And so you can kind of find, it's like a little treasure map, if you will, but it's a treasure map for golf, right?
Great fun, right?
Yeah.
Just and do something differently. Going. And you were telling me when we met, talking about the double greens. So you have 2 pins on the greens, on each of the greens, and you're saying you've got this huge expanse of green, to manage. What was the numbers that you? I've forgotten what you the numbers.
So
you said.
So collectively we are 10,500 square foot on average, if you will. We have 109,000 and change square footage of green surface on 9 holes, which is massive. And the largest green that we have on property is King. It's the only named hole that we have on our scorecard. And King is 20,000 square feet. And from front to back is 87 yards deep. And it's an Alps style hole, which is pretty sweet. It's par 3. You played it. And it's killer. It's such a fantastic hole. And I always jokingly say that the best way to attack King is, you know, walk over to the right hand side of the tee box. That way, most of the greens revealed. You can see both pins plain as day. Get your yardage. Go back to the tee box and hit it. And once you played King, you'll understand King. But you may curse at King later, as it may be one of the largest greens you've missed multiple times in the day too.
Why not try Eden Mills The Guard Bridge blended malt whiskey or golf gin? Visit our sponsor's site, www.edenmill.com, for more information. Eden Mills St. Andrews, bringing the art of distilling back to St. Andrews. I know that feeling. It's when you realize your miss is that bad, then you start to question your whole life.
That's right.
Why am I doing this? What am I doing this for? Yeah. It's but it's so much fun just trying to. It is a trick course, right? It's there. Yeah. They constantly makes you question whether you need to putt the ball, whether you're sending it high, and almost all the time it's not sending it high, but it gives you options, which is very cool.
There's been a number of people here that have been like yourself and played all over the place, and I think the neat and the compliment with Rob and Tad's architecture is that this is the highest shot valued golf course that they have generally played, because it just, you can go through the whole bag around the greens, you know.
Yeah, it's not just
you know what I mean, it's not just a you know, you're not really just gonna bump and run it. You're gonna use the flat, the Texas wedge with the putter, right? You're gonna hit some wedge shots. It's not recommended sometimes, but you're gonna hit these shots, and you can pull off a number of different shots. You can hit driver for that matter in certain spots, because you can, and it's fantastic.
Well, that's the thing that. Course doesn't need a driver that much at all. It's not about that. It's all about accuracy.
Yep.
But yet it's wide open off the fairway. Yeah.
Yep. Angles. You got the wide angles, but in certain pins, you want to be on certain sides of the fairway. It's going to be more conducive. And if you're not, you got to use the slopes to access those pins. And that's, I think, the fun part of it. And where the neat thing is that, like, American golf kind of gets so uninteresting, and this kind of puts, I think, the fun and I think what is the most lost in golf is just creativeness around the greens, and this incites creativity, I believe, with your game.
Well, that's the thing,
a lot of fun.
what I've found fascinating about what you guys are doing is you're doing everything completely different to the classic. And I know that takes a lot of thinking, and you guys have probably done it naturally because of the way you want golf to be played and done, and particularly around the club. And the reason I bring that up is because I think there's a lot of clubs that could learn from doing, I don't know, say a ticket for the day, or and get extra value and added users at the club because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also things like your merchandising, the incredible merchandising you guys put out. And I just find it fascinating how you're able to, I don't know, it's just you're resetting all norms. You're starting again. And it's not a nine-hole golf course. Man, yeah. It's like, it is incredible. And I think I that's why I wanted to have you on, to explain all these little intricacies about why it's so different.
And well, merchandise is always, I always enjoyed merchandise. I love merch. I mean, that's another one of my loves of the golf industry is the stuff that the gig, the gear, the swag, the, all the above, right? I mean, it's always fantastic, and it's done to the nines, and then you can have a t-shirt that's fantastic too. So like, we are like a lifestyle and a brand in all of itself, and people have kind of really bought into it. And we had what was probably the original four logos, and now I believe we've got a little over 30 at this point in time. So we're always coming up with another logo for another event, and people are like, man, if you ever release something with that logo on there for that event, I'd buy it. And we've sold more event extras than we did normal polos with just our regular logo on it. It's wild.
Do you mind me asking how you come up with your logos?
Yeah. Typically, maybe we do or don't partake in some whiskey and just come up with some ideas. we come up with, it's probably realistic, but we do, we just come up with the event first, and then like, what could we have? And sometimes we have a logo before we have an event format. And that's what it's about. And we just kind of branded all the way around there. And, Colt and I have been coming up with these, different ideas, and we're like, we should do this. And we did that. I mean, then we knock it off, and I've got a gentleman, Seth McWhirter, McWhirter Creative, who makes all the crazy little objects in my head reality. And it usually typically goes, hey, Seth, I got an idea. He goes, oh, Jesus. and then, you know, at that point in time, he's just like, well, really? You think? And I'm like, hey, you know what? This is like, we just this is what we're going to do. This is what I need you to do. This is why we pay you money, to make pretty little things in my head reality. And
I wouldn't say so pretty.
Yeah, that's right. And it's hilarious. And Seth's fantastic. He is super creative to the point where he's knows the ins and outs of this place so well that he can take full creativity on a lot of different ideas too now. So it's been a pleasure working with him, and he's one of the best in the biz. And like I said, we keep making stuff, and it keeps selling. This year I was humbled to receive the award for the Tennessee Section PGA Section Merchandiser of the Year Public.
Wow. So
yeah, which is pretty neat that people in my industry nominated me because they noticed what we have here, and then the numbers just speak for themselves, which are kind of mind blowing. I mean, we basically did $1 million in this shed in total gross revenue, just in apparel and merchandise.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, based on seasonality for an 18 hole facility, you know, anywhere from 390,000 to 800,000 is a great year. And to do $1 million out of a shed, it speaks volumes to what, you know, we've been able to put together, and that they're buying into the brand. They enjoyed the experience that much to purchase something to remember their day.
But you throw a lot of events around the merch as well. Not the merch is put around a lot of the events as well. So you do things like the is it a shit shirt day?
Yeah, ugly sweater.
Ugly sweater day. Look at that thing.
It's ugly.
Yeah, and, it is ugly.
So it's got Colt's face. It's got my face on it. That's what makes it so ugly. But we do an ugly sweater event, and it's just I think it's one of our most fun events of the year. And we always do. It's basically like a giant. You feel like you just had Christmas at Sweetens because of the amount of stuff that we give you. But you get a ugly sweater, a scarf, and a knit hat is the main gift. And every year we do with Seth comes up with another killer design. And so everybody's been collecting these sweaters.
Concept of being able to think outside the box and create new merchandise constantly to try and refuel the shop to keep it fresh is something that a lot of shops lack.
Yeah, and it's sometimes are tied just to the traditions, or they are such a traditional golf course in that sense that that's just the way it is, and that's there's no other thinking. And yeah, that's a really neat idea, but that's not for us, and that's okay. But we will be, I would suggest the first golf club to, have multiple shitters, on some merch, obviously the ugly sweater. And this year is the 10th anniversary of Sweetens Cove on October 17th, will be our 10th anniversary of being a golf club as Sweetens Cove. And I was talking with Rob on ideas of what we should do. And I said, hey, it would be hilarious if I've got a picture of Old Blue. If we just had a porta shitter on the t-shirt, it says Sweetens Cove # Poseidon's Kiss on the bottom. He goes, that'd be hilarious. I'm like, why not just have a porta john as one of our t-shirts? So that's going to be a 10th anniversary, because those that it's a total, if you know, you know. And if you were here back in at the beginning, you definitely were familiar with Old Blue. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's the amazing thing about the place, is because you are in a shed, and that's really just a merchandising shed, and that's it. You don't. Yep. You have a food truck there that she comes occasionally when you she'll come so many days a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have a covered area.
Yep.
For anyone who wants to eat food, and you've got a barbecue for events and things, right?
Yeah, we do something kind of different all the time. Like, we've always done like a foodie event. Like, I think our original foodie event was the Biscuit and Hash Brown Open, which was in conjunction with Waffle House. So we had the only Waffle House food truck in America. It was based out of Atlanta, Georgia, come up for the day, and we got fed Waffle House from morning till dinner. But we had that, and then we had the Hot Chicken Open with Hattie B's Hot Chicken in Nashville, which is a legendary hot chicken. It's fantastic. And we did the Hot Chicken Open, and then we did the Burger Open, which was a collaboration with Wahlburgers, you know, like Mark Wahlberg and Wahlburgers. They had a food truck from Flint, Michigan. They operate one in Flint, Michigan. It came down from Flint, Michigan, and we served Wahlburgers for the day, and it was killer. And then our last one that we had was the Stir Fry Open. And we had stir fry, and boy, it was so amazing, because the one guy that does a lot of our events, for our members and our public events that we host, he does some killer stuff. He can kind of make anything, and he had made stir fry for us the one day, and it was just awesome. And it's been one of the fan favorites every time we've had an event. And I was like, dude, we should do the Stir Fry Open. We had fortune cookies made. You can make, unbeknownst to me, before I started diving deep, and I was like, man, it'd be cool to have your own fortune cookies. So we made like, I think 10 different fortune cookies, bought like, a 1,000 of them or something like that. And it's like, you know, I see a four putt in your future. Was one of them. And
how many were good? How many were bad?
Yeah, that's right. And I said,
were they all bad?
They were all fantastic. I think one of them was, you're going to take a shot of bourbon in the shed at some point in time with Colt and Matt, and, stuff like that. And it's fun, but it was like, you know, it's just all kind of putting the pieces, the puzzle together for all the events. And then just people get excited, and they don't really, they've heard all these crazy stories, and
majority of them are true. And in some of them, you just got to get here to see it, because then you create your own story here. And that's, I think, the neat part. But the merch has always been a lot of fun in that regards, and we've done a lot of good stuff. We've that's only had one cease and desist.
Who was it from? It was
from the bass people for Bassmasters. We did a Bassmasters classic, which we fished in the morning and then we golfed in afterwards, and we may or may not have ripped off their logo, did it with a Sweetens flair. And so we were asked politely to take that down and to not reuse it. But so it's just all good. Well, we do that.
It's not like you publicly show off a lot of this stuff. It's
correct.
People come to you because they hear about these things, not because they're all over everywhere, you know? So I'm surprised Bass even heard about it.
But in my opinion, you're welcome. I mean, because that will spur some more people to fish. I don't know. Could
be. Mark Wahlberg likes it. Why don't you?
That's right. That's
right. There's very few places in golf that it's all about the golf course.
Correct.
And everything else is just almost like a side project that is not cared about, except for the merchandise you have fun with. You know, it's not about being uptight and whatever. Everything's just a show around it. The golf course is everything, though.
Correct.
So it would still be the same Sweetens Cove if nothing else existed around it.
Yeah. You can strip away all this stuff, because we don't have any of the, I guess, ancillary things that really people equate a good experience into, which is like a beautiful clubhouse and great service and all that stuff. Shower. And hot shower, right? Or spa area. I mean, like, you know, but that's a lot of the places and the clubs have that stuff because they feel like that's a necessary amenity that means something to somebody if they're going to be playing that golf course, you know. And here it's always been about the golf club. You know, there was a clubhouse intended for this place, but as we grew, we realized that it's not anything that is missed or needed. And that it's kind of like a lake house experience, right? You know, if you're fortunate to have that lake house, right? The whole important piece of the puzzle is the lake.
Yeah.
You can't have a lake house without a lake, right? And you only have the lake house to go to the lake and utilize the lake, right? Why you go to that place in the first place is to get on the lake, right? So this is kind of like the golf course is our lake, and sometimes it is a lake.
Yeah, people don't realize that. It completely submerges.
Yeah, we get fully submerges, TVA. We flood just because of where we're at. We're in a low-lying area anyway. And then when they're moving water around from the cities and stuff like that in the wintertime when we have large precipitation events and stuff like that, that's where they move the water to is us, as in a holding pattern until they can move it to away from other places. So we do occasionally November 1st through March 31st specifically is when they start moving water and when they can move water. And like if you went to Chattanooga, you'd notice that all the lakes are about 10 feet down. And well, conversely, we are 10 feet up in this area. Okay. So we're already this close from flooding at that point without rain. So if we do get a large rain event or something, we go underwater. It could be 14 feet of water in the lowest spot of the golf course, which is absolutely mind blowing. And if you see it, you'd be like, you guys are never opening again. And it opens and it's like it never happened.
Well, that's something I saw. I saw a picture of it that I try and find for people. There's it was just the flags hovering above the water,
right? Yeah,
which is just I because it's not a,
it's not flat per se.
It's not flat, but it I wouldn't say it. It's
there's more topography and little elevation changes, subtle elevation changes, right, than meets the eye. You could be side of a green, and the green's taller than you are, obviously. You know, it's 7-8.
Oh, no, in terms of the height differentials. So you can see very much how Rob Collins thought about St Andrews when doing the fairways. Yes. And things like that rolling. You never get a flat lie.
Yeah.
And the greens, and just there's a lot of elevation change within the property. Right. But in terms of if you look at a picture of it, it looks flat from distance.
Yeah.
But the subtleties and the detail, right?
It's beautiful. It's like St Andrews, the original nine, the Pinehurst number two, and a few other golf courses basically had a baby or got threw in a blender, and this is what popped out. And that's what Rob did. He loved the old course. He loves number two. So you've got a lot of runoff areas, and there's all these areas that have no reprieve because of their giant upside and down bowls, and there's no rough cut anywhere. So that ball could, when we're firm and fast, it can roll away from that green just as quick as it came in. And you could still have 15, 20 yards behind the green.
And well, there's a
precarious spot as you were before.
I remember you saying that it makes a lot of sense with the flooding stuff and the moisture. You don't have bunkers.
No, there are bunkers, but they doesn't really. There's not a lot of forced carries, if you will. So you got the bunkers, they're waste areas, right?
Yeah, and, exactly.
It doesn't really have an issue with. As far as if we had a flood, like, loss of sand or anything, it's not a normal flood like you'd think is a flood. This one just kind of goes up and down because it's coming basically up from our drainage because the water level is just rising. It's not like a gushing flood that like took out Greenbrier, a couple of years back or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. That's a major episode of biblical like water, right? I mean, it's wild, and this is a large amount of water, but it just kind of just like comes up. Sometimes it stays up for I think the longest, what we have, the longest 45 days of that amount of water straight. And then
kidding, how is there still grass?
Well, because it's dormant, right? So it's asleep, so it doesn't get affected at all, which is wild, right? But if it happened while we were in the growing season and stuff like that, we wouldn't have a golf course. You're right, because it would die. But since it's dormant, it has these other little properties that just basically is hibernating and it can recover. And it's a very large effort to put it back together. But once that water's gone, I mean, we're playing golf in a day and a half. I mean, it drains well when it has somewhere to drain. Drainage was done terrifically, and we're just waiting for the water at the TVA to go down to an acceptable level so that it can move out of this valley. It's the only thing that we ever really wait on. So
sometimes that is amazing. The drainage, that's an incredible skill to be able to just get a golf course back to being able to play off grass within a day and a half of completely flooding.
But you'll see some like minnows and fish and divots and stuff like that. It's wild. And you'll see some gar and stuff that kind of, because sometimes it goes down like really quick, like it'll be like 3 or 4 feet of water or 5 feet of water in areas. Won't be like a full-on flood like that 14 foot of water, and then it'll go down so quick that some of these fish get caught in the low-lying areas in the fairway. They'll be like beached fish, and then the hawks and the eagles and stuff like that have a little buffet. It's hilarious. Yeah.
But wild.
it's nuts. And to say that it can flood for about 5 months out of our year and we still have the conditions that we do and the playability that we do, it's just hats off to the architect that built the place, those guys that created it to give it that opportunity to recover, as well as our maintenance staff that puts Humpty Dumpty back together again, if you will.
Well, that's the amazing thing is you don't have all the finest equipment. You do it through passion more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. We've upgraded significantly in our category of maintenance equipment. that we've had, you know, in 2019, I think we got a pretty close to a full on maintenance equipment package that was like immensely better than what we did. I mean, what Brent, our original soup, had to work with was, you know, Carnival equipment. And it was wild that he did what he did, and he did an amazing job. And now we have a good set of equipment, and we're going to actually get a little bit more just because we've been able to do so well in the last couple of years and make some money that we can afford to get, you know, like what we would consider our dream package put together. And we've got eight employees in the maintenance category that take care of it and are behind the scenes, if you will, because it's not like the normal typical golf club where, you know, you see them coming off of 18 as you're teeing off or whatever. I mean, you don't see our people very much out there because they're done for the day, unless there's a couple side projects that they need to attend to and stuff, because it's a shotgun start. So they got to be ready and off the golf course to get going by 8:45 in the morning.
So on that point, what do you think is the so obviously that not cheapens because you don't have as many people on the course, but it costs less to maintain a 9-hole golf course, particularly at the standard you guys do. Is incredible how you're able to have the standards you do for a 9-hole golf course. Not that relevant on cost, just having those quality, that quality of a golf course as a 9-hole golf course and be able to maintain it like that is incredible.
Yeah.
And what do you think is the future for 9-hole golf courses? Do you think people are going to start building more, or do you think there's more interest in it because it's getting so
expensive? I think the interesting barrier that we break down is that 9 is just a number, right? I think the 9-hole golf course as a whole is a fantastic product. And it's great for time consumption. A lot of people are busy nowadays, and it's a lot easier to maybe go out and play 9 holes. It's a little more sustainable because you're not having to do so much property, I guess, too. So costs can, could be cut in half. But I think it's never that, is it? No,
because you still need the equipment to maintain it.
Really, it's still that, unless you have like a lot of our areas are waste and native areas, so they are a little bit more maintenance friendly because we don't have to take care of them as much. And you know, you jump in the bunkers and go around in a circle for a good bit, and they are what they are for the rest of the day. They're not always perfect, right? And that's the whole point of a waste bunker in the first place, right? And my opinion, as far as maintenance goes, instead of a well-kept bunker and raked bunker, it's just, that's not it. But the native areas help cut down maintenance. So you're really only taking care of those. You mow them like twice a year for us, and we spray them. But other than that, we don't have to use the cost to take care of that large portion of area. So that's a positive. But I think it's a number. I think it's becoming increasingly different of what I think is acceptable in golf, and it's just getting past the traditionalist portion of it. Like, I mean, 12 holes are a thing, right? There's some courses that are building these 12 hole complexes and utilizing all the inches so that you can get the most out of those 12 hole. I mean, Rob and Tad have put some 12 hole designs together. And you know, that way you can play a 9-hole loop and a 3-hole loop or a 12-hole loop. And that's neat and fun and different for golf. That way you have kind of if you have time constraints, well, maybe just jump on that 3-hole loop for a second. Or if you can play all day, then you play all day. Or if you play 9 or 12, I think that's the neat things that are coming in the hopper that are just more so for enjoyability and time constraints is more a show than anything. There'll always be that, you know, 3.5 to 4 hour round of golf, 18 holes. That's what we do, place. But this, I think is just this place is opening a lot of eyes to the point where it's more than just 9,
and you can have an entire day where you can enjoy yourself on the golf course and really kind of get lost for a day, which is kind of neat.
That's where I find it fascinating, right? There's so many clubs in the world that are city clubs, mm-hmm. have 18 holes and maybe a bit of property in an old, tired clubhouse. And the 18 holes aren't good. They're not made up for much and no one really wants to play them.
Yep.
Is there a point where you guys have been a proving ground for these spaces to go, right, actually, let's sell off a bit of property, get someone like King Collins in to build us an incredible 9-hole or 12-hole golf course and follow a different model?
I think so. I mean, we've had there's two golf courses that are kind of in the works. There was one in Jackson, Mississippi. I think, was it Jackson, Mississippi, where Brazenhead was?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that might not happen because they ended up having a lot of permitting issues. But then there's another one in Tupelo, Mississippi, that is a 12-hole design. It was an 18-hole facility. And, you know, Rob and Tad went in there and kind of picked out the best, how to best utilize the land, and kind of came up with 12 great holes. And kind of that was their premise. And we've had a lot of industry people reach out to myself and Rob and just of how we do things here and like the past schedule and the all day, option and how to kind of perform that, because it's just such an unknown in our industry that not a lot of people or clubs have ever really even seen it. It's not like it's not been done anywhere before where they've had an all day rate or you have the opportunity to play that place. It's kind of like getting the ability to have a private course to yourself for the day.
Yeah.
Is what I kind of equate it to at this point in time. And I was just talking to a group out in Australia, on how we do it and why we did it and how it evolved, because it was never really a planned thing either. It's not like it was kind of more organically that it happened and it took off and it was really enjoyed by a majority of people. And so they were just it was just kind of unfathomable like how we did it. And it's different in golf in Australia too, because they have it, what I wasn't unaware of is you generally have your golf round and day revolves around a game each day, and you put in $10 or whatever a dollar figure is at the beginning of the day, and everybody plays this game. You just when your tee time is up, and you have the ability to get some shot credit or something like that, and keeps people in it because they're more. We're, I think, in America here, we're more recreational golfers as opposed to tournament golfers,
yeah.
You know? And so that was interesting. So that the all-day model was very, because nothing like that in Australia kind of exists. So it's kind of like they were kind of thinking about it, how they could do that type of, still have that type of atmosphere, but have an experience where you're just there for the day and it'd be kind of a one of a kind over there that could spark some interest. So
fascinating. It's
yeah. Like,
you've had to beat down doors to get to the position you are now. You've proven you're a very successful 9-hole golf course that's got world recognition by and has every famous person, every golf architect, you have pros turning up, you have everyone in the golf community coming to see what's going on there, which it must be a massive compliment to what you're doing.
It's a lot of fun when I have a lot of my industry folks that I've looked up to for so long just say, what the hell are you doing over there? Like, how are you guys doing these type of numbers and etc. And it's just like it's kind of fun, and it's like, hey man, I've wanted to ask you stuff like that for forever, and it's funny that you're asking me. So it's just it's pretty wild and humbling in that sense, and Rob has given me this little opportunity to run with these crazy ideas at times that have just been successful. And, it's just, it's pretty cool. I mean, like you talk about accolades and stuff like that. It's been wild. The course has been recognized architecturally, by Golf Week, a number of different showcases, as low as number 49 in the, top 100 modern, golf courses. And I think we're at like 87 or something like that right now. But we're like number 21 in the country, for public golf courses, and or resorts. And then, we're number 7 9 hole golf club in the world, which is pretty special. So it's hard to, I think, attract people to a 9-hole golf course. So we've had to do such crazy things, and call them antics, you want to call them whatever, it's an attention grab. So we've got your attention for a second that you did a little research, and all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, I really would like to go play there. I want to go see what all this buzz is about. And then I've got you. And then you come here and you're like, holy crap, that was awesome. Or a couple people, I hated it. So, there's kind of a little chaotic as far as how they get people out there, but it is what it is. I'd say 85 to 90% of the people that come here really, really enjoy that. And that's because it's so different, and that's a plus. And then the golf course speaks for itself. So,
well, that's the thing. You have a good golf course to start you all off, and then you've just got to try and, you're doing an amazing job there. And I went there and still am grappling with the idea of what's going on. And I'm trying to get, that's why I wanted to interview, because it was so, I was kind of standing around. So a great way of describing it is, I studied wine, okay? And the reason I studied wine was because the first thing I did when I would go into a wine shop and I would go up to the wine or a wine bar, it's like, what the hell have you got that's weird and wonderful? I want something different.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if I've ever been to a more different place in golf, which is so cool and just made me think a lot. And also obviously been described as a thinking man sport, right?
Right.
So I just compliment you on that.
Appreciate it.
It was really cool. A very cool experience. And I think I'm going to come back for the, Dave's invited me to do the member guest.
Oh, that'd be terrific. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to come back for that, which would be kind of fun.
Yeah, Octobers are usually the best month of the year, the entire year. October, we wait to get to October because October is generally just fire conditions. Just everything you want this golf course to be, just firm, fast, and just absolutely terrific. And it's every golfer's, I guess, wet dream. And that's it's just terrific. And in September it gets pretty good, but October is mint.
Well, you have a few beers, you just have good food kicking around, and
yeah,
and everyone's just chatting. It's a social place.
Yeah, 100%. And it's it's kind of like what's made us, social media, etc. And that bit is kind of got us to this level where we're at now. And it's just it's pretty neat to sit back and watch.
I always ask the final question, and the final question is always top five favorite golf courses. Now, one thing I will add is I've had someone say 13. So just where you feel the courses that are your favorite, almost like you feel at home, or the things that made you think, or.
Yeah. So I will say, do they list them in order of one?
No, you don't know order.
Not necessarily order. So Inverness Club in Ohio, one of my favorites. I grew up caddying there when I was in high school. I fell in love with the game, there too as well. And that's been one of my top. I love Oakmont.
Yeah.
In love with Oakmont, I think. Sweetens Cove, because I can't not say it.
You have to. It'd be weird if you didn't.
Yeah. And the Heather
up in northern Michigan in Boyne.
Okay.
One of my favorites. I really enjoy the Loop in Forest Dunes.
Okay.
And ironically, the Die course at French Lick was just so different.
Oh yeah,
beautiful. Yeah, he's got these. They've got these volcano bunkers that are just wild, and just sits up on like one of the highest points in southern Indiana, and it's just unreal. Okay. Really neat. And yeah, I'm big. But I would say. Pinehurst number two. I'm a big number two guy. And I think, you know, that's pretty much it.
What's the Heather Club?
The Heather is up at Boyne, in Boyne, and it's just one of my favorite northern Michigan golf courses. It's just got a lot of variety to it. Some killer par fours, great finishing par four over a pond. And it's a very underrated golf club, and resort for that matter. They've got 11 golf courses and it's fantastic. They've got the Bay Harbor, which is right on the water on Little Traverse Bay. And it's fantastic. It looks like the Whistling Straits of you know, northern Michigan, and it's really killer. But the Heather is just a good Parkland golf club, and it's a fun golf course. I really enjoyed it, and it challenges you. It's a good little track, and that was like one of my favorites up in northern Michigan. I mean, Kingsley's a good one too. I do like Kingsley as well, but Heather was always, you know, one that I enjoyed going back to every time and playing. It's fun.
Well, that's the thing. You've been a pro on every bloody state in US, so you've probably traveled playing quite a lot of golf courses.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, you never play enough, right? But
no, never.
Quite. I've been fortunate to have all those jobs, and all those people that have a lot more money than I do tended to bring me along with them. And so that wasn't too bad.
When are you back on the golf course? Because I know you've had a wee bit of an injury.
Yeah, I just had a tussle with a front end loader. The best part about it is I got up and it did not. So,
well, what's that prove to you? You should have been an offensive lineman.
That's right. Yeah, but I would love to be on the golf course by the end of the year. I think that's a really good goal. I played two holes with my dad and my son the other day just to do it, and that wasn't a super smart thing. I hurt pretty good after that, but it was fun. You don't know how many more opportunities you get to do that with your pops and your son. So I did it, and but I think where I'll be comfortable and not like miserable and actually make a good pass at the ball would probably be, I hope by the end of the year it would be great.
I've got one last question before we leave. Is there any, what would be your tagline or thing you'd say to people within the golf community that you think, especially in the shops or in the golf management business, what that they're missing, that you experienced and seen work that they are, I don't know, they think it's the wrong thing to do? Or
I would suggest it just depends. I said sometimes let down your guard a little bit, enjoy what you have, and you can still have fun and still be traditional at the same sense. So, but you know, maybe just be a little bit more out of the box, really kind of play with some of your landscapes, you know, some of your stories, some of your history could be a cool logo. And you never would have thought to make it that, because this is what we've done. And I just, I think that's the biggest thing. Utilize that, utilize the club stories, you know, tell those stories so that more people are comfortable with their environment and their employees. Because it's fun to be able to tell stories about those folks. And you know, like we had at Detroit Golf Club, there was this guy, Eddie, Eddie was a bartender for 50 plus years at the club, and everybody knew Eddie, and they called him Boss Man. And we ended up having an invitational before he passed away, even for the Boss Man. And it was all a day for him. And they called him the Boss Man because at one point in time, Eddie was pretty sharp, but 50 years into it and so many member changeovers, right? He just called everybody boss. Hey, boss, how you doing, boss? And so it was the Boss Man. And like just unique things like that. And people, it's just so funny. And you made a little term out of that. And that's just history. It's a history, even though they're an employee, they're a person that's given their life, I mean, a lifetime, 50 years to this membership. So, you know, have fun with that. Enjoy those people and get that a little creative juices flowing. It's never going to hurt.
Well, that's the thing, you're a club, right? I'm not saying you're a club, you're a group of people that are coming together for a common love of one thing.
Yeah.
And it's a golf course or a golf, whatever, a golf club if you have a good, and share those experiences with each other, right?
That's right.
That's what golf's all about. It's not really, at the end of the day, about the golf course and yourself. It's about the people you play it with.
Yep. People you choose to play it with.
I had a conversation with someone the other day that I won't mention who it was, but he's walked off the golf course something like 30 times because he just had been paired with the wrong people. I'm not playing this golf. There's no point in me playing golf if I'm not with the right people.
That's right. Yep. That's our biggest thing here. Play with the people that you brought, because you invited them to enjoy the day, right? Share that experience. And that's why we let you play in those large groups. If you brought eight people, you should play with eight people.
Well,
I only play in fours.
Well, great experience for us is we were only three. And another group of five was there. And we ended up chatting to them over some pizza and ended up doing a loop with them.
Yep.
So... and playing as an eight ball, it just shows you that you can do what you want, but as long as it's in a respectful manner, you know. Thank you, Matt, for a fantastic interview. Really enjoyed that. A lot of very interesting insight into the amazing world of Sweetens Cove, which in my opinion is probably going to change the landscape of nine-hole golf courses, particularly around the management of them. If you have anything to say, get in touch. It's James at top100golfcourses.com or at the official Top 100 Instagram. And please remember, play fast, lunch slow.